everybody. Welcome to All Powers of the Imagination, for those of you who haven't attended the conference yet.
Hello. Thank you, everyone, for coming. My name is Jackie. I'm one of the All Power to the Imagination conference organizers. And, yeah, we're glad to have everyone here. I'm just going to introduce Ashanti, who I first met when I was working on a documentary in January about the APOC movement, anti-authoritarian, autonomous, and anarchist people of color. I was able to have a great conversation with Ashanti along with my co-filmmakers, Cindy and Kotu, and Ashanti agreed to come, so we're really excited to have him here. A few words about Ashanti and his work. Ashanti is an anarchist activist, speaker and writer, and former member of the Black Panther Party. He was also a member of the Black Liberation Army and served a total of 14 years as a political prisoner. Ashanti is a former Northeast coordinator for Critical Resistance, currently co-chairs the National Jericho Movement to Free U.S. Political Prisoners, a member of the pro-Zapatista People of Color U.S.-based group, Estación Libre, and former board member of the Institute for Anarchist Studies. Without further ado, Ashanti Nelson.
Butterflies. Thank you. And it's an honor to be the keynote speaker at the All Power to the Imagination Conference. And to be in this room with all of you who have decided that you're going to carry on the revolution, you know, small R revolution. You know, big R revolution's got all the answers. Small R, we're going to figure it out as we go. You know, so that's the one we're a part of. You know, that's the non-hierarchical revolution. That's the one that's like the small head. We don't have big heads, you know, at least not idea big head. I got a big head. I keep my hat on, though. But I'm glad to speak also because, you know, to speak to you with who I am, it really is an honor. You know, people say to me sometimes, you know, a lot of times that, you know, it's an honor to know you. And I tell them back, it's an honor to know you. You know, because I feel like, especially, you know, when you're younger, because you're telling me that you're carrying this on. You know, it is an honor for me to know you. Because you decided that this wasn't all in vain, that this wasn't all for naught, you know, that people are going to carry this through until we change this world or create a new world or many worlds, as the Zapatistas say, you know. So when you know, for me to come here and to accept that invitation, I was like really honored. And to know that you are basically young folks. And when the message that the United States wants to give is that this isn't what young folks do, you know, but it is what young folks do. And sometimes we have to remind ourselves because we think we do it in isolation. But I know that everywhere I go, and I don't get many speaking engagements, but when I do, everywhere I go, I'm meeting young folks who have decided to take this path. You know, sometimes we got to remember and look around so that we see we're not isolated. That we are here in a very, very positive time. We sometimes romanticize the 60s, and maybe we should. The 60s was great. It was bad in that great sense. But I'm convinced that the period we live in now, with you, is going to be even better because you know what to do. Really, you know what to do. I mean, we did the best that we could back then with what we knew. We did the best that we could. All of the movements, all of the organizations, and it wasn't just the Black Panther Party. It was thousands of groups. Many that you will never hear, the majority that you will never hear of, but people joined. There was many demonstrations and marches in small towns and medium cities that you never hear about, that some of your parents or relatives may be have been involved with, but that helped to create that period called the 60s that was so magical in the sense that there were so many of us who believed that this revolution was now, that we made it feel like that, and we made the system feel it. And they felt it. They felt it really good. It shook them up. And we didn't even really know what we were doing. We was just motivated. We was just inspired. You know, and this is 2008. 1968 was 40 years ago. People was like in the streets all over the world. From here to France. From here to Mexico. From here to Africa. Here to Asia. You could not turn on the television and not see people fighting somewhere and not feel your connection. Because we were communicating. We were communicating in all kind of ways. And it wasn't just the very public figures. Communications was happening all around in many different ways. We talk about zines today. There was thousands of zines back then. And it was the way that people was communicating. Because we didn't have mass media. We didn't even want mass media. Because we knew what the nature of mass media was. But every time you went somewhere, you could pick up 5-10 underground newspapers that was giving relevant information, that was reporting on actions that average regular folks was doing to make it possible, or was making people understand that it was possible to resist. It was possible to go after the system in so many ways, or at least to show that the system just couldn't clamp us down at will. That was the 60s. Is that the same way it is now? In many ways, yeah. We just don't hear about it. We just don't hear about it. When I pick up the newspapers of the media that covers animal and earth first actions, I see all of these things happening that I would not normally know about. When I travel from city to city, there are people who are fighting back. Whether it's around tenants, whether it's around community gardens, whether it's around police brutality, environmental issues, all over the United States is happening. Sometimes we think it's just happening overseas. So for me, I'm excited. I am totally excited today. Because I know that as long as we're fighting, we're trying to figure it out, we ain't gave up. I've been to other conferences, and it's like people are trying to figure it out. That's what every workshop, every presentation is about. Presenting information on issues that we've had difficulties with, that someone wants to share something that they have discovered, something that they have worked out with others who are doing this work and organizing. We're doing this every day. But a lot of times we just got to remind ourselves that it's connected for real. It is really connected. We just got to realize how connected it is. There's the chaos theory where they talk about the butterfly, you know, the wings of the butterfly flap and it causes, what is it, an earthquake somewhere or something? I mean, I don't even know how true that is, but I like the metaphor, right? But for me, what it means is that small individual actions that we think don't mean anything, we never, never, never know what it means. And for real, it always means something, if only to the individual who did the action. I don't know if you're familiar that maybe about 3 months ago to a month in New York, some individual rides up on the bike to the recruiting station in Times Square. You know, drops off a little package, you know, rides off until the sunset. 60 seconds later, boom. didn't really destroy the recruiting station, but it sent a message. And the person even said, we can do it, or something to that effect. And when you see in the newspapers the next day, you see that they captured it all on camera. But this individual knew that regardless of the surveillance power of this system, you still can't stop resistance. You can't stop people. I was so excited by just that small action because it demonstrated to me and others that the system ain't as overwhelming, all-powerful as it makes itself out to be and convinces us that it is. But that was done by, I'm sure, young folks. And I'm not going to say that it had to be a guy. Could have been a woman. Who knows? Could have been a kid. But people are not taking this stuff. They're not taking it. They're not taking a system that keeps pressing down on us. It presses down on us from every station of life where we find ourselves. This is not just a struggle of the poor folks. It's not just a struggle of the folks of color. It's not just a struggle of people that have no capital. It presses down even on people who are very privileged. Just like in the 60s, people who joined the Students for a Democratic Society, many who were very privileged, but who the life became unbearable for them, not on a material level, but just on a life level. Just the staleness, the oppressiveness of life, living with privileged parents, family, community, so divorced from all the other things going on in the world that the children said at some point, in their own words, ya basta, enough parent, enough school, enough teacher, enough preacher. I want to engage my life with where it really can count. And people uprooted themselves from privilege to journey down south to work with poor black folks primarily to help them win certain levels of self-determination, which sometimes meant the vote. You know, but look at what happens to people from all stations of life. What becomes important is not what class you come from at the bottom line or what race you are, but it's the point of coming to some kind of consciousness that moves you forward, that gets you up, where you begin to accept being uncomfortable. Because changing that kind of consciousness is definitely going to make you uncomfortable. But I think if anything distinguished us in the 60s, we were willing to go with that uncomfortability. We were willing to take the risk anyhow. Scared. I joined the Black Panther Party. Excited. But believe me, the first time I joined, I understood my life could go. I was scared. I'm not that macho. You know, I see what the police do to people. I see what the government does. But I'm moved. I'm motivated. I want to be a part of this revolution. The first time I have to go out in the streets to organize, a Panther will come from Plainfield to Plainfield, my hometown, from New York. Panther comes to New York and they would kind of walk us through what it means to be a Panther. Basically, it starts off with how to sell the newspaper. It's terrifying if you have been alienated from your own people that someone now comes and say, use this newspaper and break that alienation. Begin conversation. Begin dialogue. It's terrifying. 17 years old. Yet, when I see that person who I admire do it, scared as I am, I'm going to take them steps. Just like that child learning to walk for the first time on wobbly legs. And the first time I do it, the words ain't coming out real slick like the panther that did it. Mine's come out kind of corny, you know. But as I do it more, it gets better. My confidence starts to rise. I want to learn more. I want to learn now how to organize. when we engage, when we step in to the mix, though scary at first, you begin to get confident. It begins to get more comfortable. And you begin to learn. This is why I say today, the spirit, the fact I'm still alive, being alive today in this revolution now is going to be much better than the 60s. Because of the things that we are even challenged to learn. Confront our enemies, those external enemies, yeah, that's one thing. We know what's going to happen. The police are always going to be there. And if it gets too bad, what's the Blackwater? They could source that out somewhere. You know, if they need to get around the law, they'll do that. But we know we're going to confront them. The things that you're really going to confront that's scary is your own fears about your relationship to them. And your own fears about your relationship to the people that you're going to begin to meet and know who are supposed to be doing the same thing as you, is outreaching, organizing, trying to inspire others. Those things are going to be terrifying to you too. So when we meet like this, it's a place, it's a space to even challenge ourselves on that level. This is much greater than the 60s because we know more today. We understand more of internal oppressions. We understand like it's not so much the cop out there, it's the cop in here. And it's like both battles have to go at the same time, but you know, this one is key. To overcome this one changes the world. The fear that remains predominant of that one will keep you just right where you're at, and you still may talk a certain revolutionary language, you still may write a revolutionary essay, you still may do a demo or a march, but you stay in a certain place that really doesn't change anything. It's exciting, though, when you think about it, to kind of throw yourself into something that's going to also change your life. I tell people my story sometimes because, when I became a part of the movement, it was through the Black Power movement, and I was very much influenced by the Nation of Islam. I hated white people. Did not want to be around them. And like in the Nation of Islam, like, yeah, they're devils. Kill them all. When I joined the Black Panther Party, that began to change. But not easily. Those Panthers, being from the same type of communities, felt my hatred, my anger, but explained to me class terms that we can't look at our enemy always as skin color. We got to look at class. We got to understand what the class makeup is as well as the race factor. And then they would do that with some of their white allies right there with them. And I would watch these white allies do the work of allies. And I have to confront the fact at some point, like, shit, I hate these people, but I don't hate her. I hate these people, but I don't hate him. Because they with me. They watch my back. They joke with me. And I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, it's hard, Ashanti, it's hard. But you got to relax that some. So with the Panthers, I'm getting this different view of Black power and revolution. But it's challenging me here. It's challenging me here. And then other experiences happen where in the Panther Party there's women in charge of things. I'm a 17-year-old. I don't even think I got it together quite yet, the macho thing. But I definitely think that I'm supposed to be that way until you meet the sisters in the Black Panther Party who break it down to you that you got to treat them the same way that you treat the brothers. So here I am again being challenged to change something here. Here, the opportunity to change something here to make me a better person during the course of this revolution. I say you got better understandings of that today and you got better tools. That's why I'm excited about being here today. I don't really romanticize the 60s anymore, you know, but I do want you to recognize what you have today. And this revolution that you're involved with today, and what's involved with it. What's the potential of it? And when I say it, I'm talking about what's inside of you. To change, to challenge, to transgress, to cross borders, to dare to be someone that you've never been before, that may have been hidden all your life that you never even knew how to bring out, but the day that we operate today, we create space for people to be that, for who they are, and demand that those relationships around us help nurture that. Where else do you find movements that when men and women are in the group that is put forward in the beginning of the meeting, the men, hey, y'all, you know you talk a lot, practice stepping back, you know, or other things that we do to keep us conscious of how we have silenced queer people, or to remind us of the oppressions of the indigenous folks, or to bring us awareness of why there's folks fighting for animal liberation and Earth First, who's asking us to expand our understanding of who we are so much that we decenter ourselves as human beings from being the center of the universe and realign ourselves with all living things. That's great. I'm happy to be alive today because I didn't have that understanding back then. I have it from interacting with you. And you have it from interacting with each other. It's something the system cannot change. It cannot stop unless they can scare us into submission. And obviously our presence here today means that we ain't scared into submission. So the system is in trouble. And it should be. It should be. But we are those forces. We are those forces that can help bring about this kind of consciousness, this kind of practice that can resonate with others, where others can see it and hear it and say, well, I want to be a part of a movement where people can see my face. I want to be a part of a movement where people can hear my voice. I want to be a part of a movement that recognizes diversity. That's where I want to be. A lot of other movements are not doing that. But those in anarchist and anti-authoritarian movements do that. I'm not saying that we can't improve a lot. Of course we can. We're going to be doing that all as long as we're alive. But we do that more so than anyone else on the so-called left. And I think that it means that we have a lot to offer. The workshop today, the last one I was at before I had to go to dinner, was the Radical Mental Health and Eco-Spirituality. And it reminded me when I was at the Institute for Social Ecology up in Vermont. And what I thought about was that the times I have been up there, here are young people learning about herbs, medicinal purposes, all these things that government and other corporate forces, medical corporate forces as well, have told us that we don't need to know because they got it all together. We go to the hospital. But it made me think about how people can learn what they need to know and put it into practice for these movements that we're in. So here's a person that's telling us about all these different things that have medicinal purposes, and some things are considered weeds, some are flowers, some are this or that. You know, I'm like, we know this stuff. I know people that know all about the climate changes. You know, regular people, not in positions of power, not in no governmental organization, but know these things, and people who fight against it. I know people that are trying to get other parents to develop alternative parenting methods. And it makes me realize that we, this generation, present day and time, have knowledges and understandings that are always growing about how to live differently. Yet it seems like we got to be the ones to convince ourselves that we know this stuff and that we are potentially connected to so many other people around the world who are also doing the same thing. The green revolution that's going on in Africa. You know, sometimes it seems like we're the ones who need to be convinced of our power. Yet when I walk around, I see it all the time in you. You know. And that's what's great about this to me. But the struggle is always to like make sure that you really understand this and you believe it. It goes to what is called dreaming or envisioning. Robin D.G. Kelly's book is called Freedom Dreams. Come on, y'all knew that. You're supposed to help me out. You know I'm getting old. Anyhow, the title itself, Freedom Dreams, Freedom Dreaming, the ability to envision a different world. We have to be really clear on that. We have to really see that. We have to really feel that. And then we have to really figure out ways to help bring that about. Because if they can shut down our ability to dream, they really won. But it's an impossible task. Because as long as one person is dreaming of something better, envisioning something better, it's on. We can win. We can figure it out. Somehow that one person is going to connect with somebody else somewhere and the ball gets rolling. An organizing starts to happen. A movement starts to grow. A Zapatista situation arises. A Seattle situation arises. Or some community somewhere decides that they want their community back physically because their lives are on the line and they don't have a choice. And when that happens, we have to be in a position to offer all we can. And we do that already. That's why some people do go, you know, like to Chiapas or Argentina or occupied Palestine. And sometimes people even remember to go to the indigenous nations right here and offer help too, you know. Or how we help each other sometimes. I think we forget that too. We get to know each other. We forget that we're also creating community amongst ourselves. And the ways that we do it is also part of how we see this world that we want to create. Because we're trying as best we can to be caring. We're trying as best we can to be loving. We're trying as best we can to cut down on practices that we've been so accustomed to hurting each other. Which is why it's so important for men to fight sexism. We got to fight it constantly. To fight heterosexism, we got to fight it constantly. To fight racism, we got to fight it constantly. Because we came up in a society that put that in us in such a way that it felt normal. You know, it just came, it's like secondhand. But joining a revolution doesn't necessarily mean that just because you read a few books and now you join an organization, you're not acting that stuff out. That's baggage that comes with you. So this revolution has like two aspects to me. That external enemy, and at the same time we're fighting that system that is right in us. No different from what Frantz Fanon has said, no different from what Wilhelm Reich has said, no different from a lot of other radical psychologists, radical feminists, others have said. This one here becomes key because the ways that we treat each other will determine what kind of relationships we really, really have. And if we want the kind of powerful relationships that can change the world, we got to work on that all during the course of all this other organizing against external systems, enemy systems, and all these other things. For me, that's what we face today. We got to constantly keep it in the forefront of our minds that there's two struggles. And all the time, we got to figure out how to deal with this one here. Because that's the one that keeps us human, that keeps us full of possibilities, that really makes it possible to change this world. Or if we can't change this world, we can create a new one. Create a new one. Very powerful. It's enough to keep me going. It doesn't matter that I did like 14 years in prison, but when I compare that against those who are still in prison for like 20, 30, 40 years, what's 14 years? It's nothing. And then those who are in there for 20, 30, 40 years, when I visit them, what do they ask me? What are people doing on the streets? And I say, well, they're struggling. They're fighting. They're organizing. And I'm not lying, because I tell them what I see. They've been in there so long that some of them come to terms that they're going to die in prison. They know it's not at the level of the 60s. Maybe it is at the level of the 60s, but it's just different. But it's not as effective as the 60s yet. So they think that, well, it's going to take some time, and they're getting old and their health is not that good. Some of them, like, you know, I might die in here. What helps them to come to terms with that is you. You. They can come to terms with dying in prison if they know you are carrying this on, that you have picked up that torch, that you are continuing that revolutionary story from all of your own individual stories, from all of your own communal stories, from all of your own class stories, that is coming in a direction that is building the force to change this reality, or to produce the reality that we really need to be free, to be free. And it's okay that we don't have all the answers. So the political prisoners, they're fine. They want to come home. There's no question about it. But they want you to be as enthused, as hyped up about this dream, this vision, and this struggle as they were, as we were, when we was in the 60s in the streets, in the 70s in the streets. And that's all that they ask. And it's all that I ask of you. Be as enthused. Be as excited about it. Because this is going to be hard times. It's a lot of wear and tear to say, I am a revolutionary. I am an anarchist. I am a resistance fighter. A lot of wear and tear. People ain't going to be knocking on your door saying, hey, I'm ready to join. You got to constantly figure out, what is it that keeps people from knocking on my door saying, where can I join? People are scared. People have been intimidated. It's not that they don't know, because on so many levels they do know. But they're scared. So maybe it is not handing them a paper that's saying, come to this rally, come to this conference, come to this march, come to this demo. It may mean going back to something that's kind of old, which is going into communities and actually having dialogues with people. Like them northern activists did when they went to the south, to communities that they was not familiar with, culturally, racially, even class-wise, but were willing to go in there and start dialogue with people. The key is somewhere in there. And for me, it's just funny because it's the thing I miss most about the 60s, most about the Panthers, was the day-to-day organizing in them communities. Because once I got over my own fear of my own people, it was not only exciting, I felt genuinely good about me. And I saw the difference in the people who I related to in my community, who felt good about me being there, and felt good about us young teenage Panthers being there. You have to imagine yourself as that person in a community. And all the communities that you're in, one person that may be in 10 different communities. But what happens when you really begin to give your life to that, to build the kind of relationship that we need to be powerful change agents in this world? That's what we face. And if we face that, there's no way we can lose. With all the technology they got, with the militarization of the police, with the neo-Nazi groups running around here and there, or just really conservative average workers who just may bop you upside your head at an anti-war march. You know, it doesn't matter. I think we do hold the moral ground. But I think it's more that there's a brightness with us. There's something very life-affirming about us that has to catch on with people when we engage in the kind of relationships with them that we need to. And we just don't talk about it. We just don't say, yeah, we got to do this. But we figure out a way to actually make the steps, even if we're afraid to do it. That happened in the 60s, and it made the 60s a very powerful time. It can make this time very powerful it's not over. Elections are diversions. Wars are diversions. A whole bunch of things. Everything they give us to buy, the next cell phone that they come out with, and the next one will probably beam us up like Scotty, and we'll be buying it, you know. No matter what they come up with, it can't stop people from coming together and actually kind of, like the Zapatistas also, pull us out of the game. Pull us out. So that the power can be with us. That's power to the people. That's power through the people. It's us. It's us coming out of this. And I think that's the thing that's so dynamic about the Zapatistas, is that they've decided that they're pulling out of the game. They're not going to be a part of it anymore. And as that threw a monkey wrench into the political system of Mexico and had reverberations all around the world, you know, to stop participating. That's why I'm like, national elections, what for? It's a game. Why can't we focus on our power, on our possibilities? Why is so many people trying to pull us back in? Vote. Buy. Vote. Buy. You know, we have the power. We are the power. And I think once we recognize that, it's going to be a new day. New day. And if I can tell you anything, if I can convince you of anything, is that when a people light up, watch out. The whole world lights up around you. You know, and we just got to be prepared to just struggle and figure this out as we go. Protect ourselves. Nurture those things that are life-affirming in us. Protect those things that we've gained, from the community centers to the schools to the Food Not Bombs doing their thing, whatever, the independent schools that people will set up, the efforts to protect our communities or protect the women in our communities from domestic violence, the children. All those things is what we do to take back our lives in so many small aspects. Let's do it. That's what these conferences are for. These conferences are telling us that we're on the right path, that we have the knowledges, or we can get them, to take care of ourselves and build this world that we want. So I say, let's do it. Let's do it now. Right on. Power to the people. Okay, I did bring some stuff in the back.